So David gives me this topic, and I don't know why. You know, I think he enjoys this, giving me topics like this. The family who sacrifices like Jesus. Several years ago, he gave me a topic I was supposed to teach on stewardship, and it was giving like Jesus gave. Okay, let's just get this out here. How did Jesus sacrifice? He died, right? He came and he died for us. All right, here we go, guys. Class is over. We can't do that, right? And suddenly, Gary, teach about how people, you should use Jesus' giving as an example. I'm like, he died. There's no 10% or 20% there. That's 100%, right? So I started with that premise. I'm like, how do I even teach a class about a family that sacrifices like Jesus? Because, I mean, he gave it all, right? And there's nothing, nothing that I can do. So let's step back, though, from the he died part. He gave himself for us. But what did he give up? He gave up, there's one I've got to have my notes. He gave up the glory of heaven. And you know, Jonathan didn't preach about heaven. He talked about getting there. And you know, I don't know what heaven's like, but it's got to be better than here. Right? And he gave that up. What else did he give up? And I said the obvious already. That's actually number two on my notes. He gave up his life, right? Yeah, he gave up his life. What else? What did he give up? What else did he give up? And there's something I want to see if you can get to where I was on this.
On the cross, he gave up his closeness with God, or God gave up his closeness with him.
Yeah.
He gave up a roof over his head, a steady job.
I've got that. Yeah, I said, you know, Matthew chapter 8, verse 20, you know, that the Son of Man doesn't have a place to put his head down, a place to call his own. Think about... Yeah.
In the Garden of Gethsemane, when he was pleading through the prayer.
Yeah. Yeah.
He gave up his royalty.
Gave up his royalty to come down. These are all great things, and every one of them's right. It just blows my mind. Let's see. John 1:11. What does it say there? I'm sorry? I'm deaf now. That's one of my new things. So if you got to say something, you got to say it really loud. And last night while I was running, I almost ran into a wall because I'm also blind now. When you run long distances, your blood stops flowing to certain parts of your bodies. And so when I run, my eyes get blurry. And I literally almost ran right into a wall last night. It was hilarious. If you had been there, you would have laughed, baby. John 1:11, what does that say? Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah.
You know, what did he give up? Think about everything he gave up. He gave up his family. Once he got here, right? He gave up those relationships. He didn't have a place to live. I mean, that for us guys, that's a tough life, right? I mean, we have programs to fix things like that, right? They didn't have that in the first century in Israel. They didn't have, you know, Habitat for Humanity. They didn't have anything. But you know what? And let me say that it's hard for me to even compare to that. And so when I started thinking about how do I even address this, I wanted to step back and think about think about something that was probably prior to that. I hope this comes out the right way. So God's in heaven and creates the world. And comes up with this plan, and you know, I could just see this, me talking to Daniel. Hey, I got this plan. I'm going to do this great thing, and I'm going to get these people involved, and they're not going to like us that much, right? They're going to be mean to us. They're not going to like us, but I'm going to fix it all, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you go die. And I could just see Jesus, if he were my son, which he's not, and please don't be offended by that, but he would go, Dad, that's the stupidest plan I've ever heard. Right? I mean, it's why would you send your son for that? And so I started thinking about, what did Jesus really give up? And I thought, John 4:34, someone read that verse for me. Because I think this is the big part of what I want to talk about a little bit today, is where this comes from. John 4:34.
And Jesus food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work.
So what did before Jesus left heaven, before he was born of a woman, before he lived the life that we live, before he was homeless, before he was rejected by his people, before he was beaten, before he died on the cross, what did he give up first?
Being God.
No, read, what why did he come? Why did he come here? So what did Jesus give up first?
Doing his will.
There you go. Isn't that something? And my mind works a certain way, and if you've been in one of my classes, I know you were because I taught this recently. If you listened, you may not have. You're young. I can appreciate that. I look at everything in my logic, and I think everything in life has input, process, and output. Input is all the factors that go into it. Process is how do we deal with it, and output's the results of that process, right? Every sacrifice that we just listed for Jesus, aside from giving up his will, was an output, right? Leaving heaven is the result of something else. Dying on the cross is the result of something else, right? They're all results. They're all outputs of the process. And the process, in my mind, and you are more than willing to more than able to disagree with me, just don't be smarter than me to make it so I can't respond, is that the process is that he gave up his will. So before there was sacrifice, there was surrender. And I think that's a key word that I want to talk about for a little while. Is that, and as we go through this class and we talk about sacrifices, I think what we'll talk about a lot are the results, are actions that are the results of a process. And the process that leads to sacrifice, I think, contains a lot of surrender. It's kind of a cause and effect thing, right? Yes, ma'am.
Can you do the will of the Father?
Yes, he did. He came down and he did it. Jonathan talked about that, right? He said, if he came to came so we our sins could be forgiven, then they were forgiven, and that was good to hear. So let's look at Philippians chapter 2, verses 6 through 8. I brought my own Wi-Fi card because that Palm Beach Lakes Publix thing never works. Let's start in verse 5. Someone besides Jimmy. Input, process, output in this verse, the way I see it. What started Jesus? Look at this. Having this attitude in yourself, why would Jesus, who existed in the form of God, empty himself?
Here on the earth.
Yeah, but what caused him to do it?
Obedience.
Obedience, there's one. Obedience to the will of the Father. I think someone else said the other one.
Love.
Love for us. Yeah. So definitely what happens here is that through that attitude, through these inputs, in obedience to God, he humbled himself. And that's surrender. And when I look at us in our society today, and this is once again my personal opinion, I sometimes struggle with Americans as a group, perhaps being the most humble people in the world. I have maybe the benefit or maybe the curse of working with a lot of international people who are not ashamed to discuss with me what they perceive as American arrogance. I don't know if any of you have encountered something similar to that or have heard that common thing. But, don't we raise our children to be very, very strong and very proud of themselves? I did. I wanted them to. I wanted them to have self-assurance. My mom did the same thing, and she obviously went overboard with me. And Jonathan. Not so much David. That was probably, but he was one of the first ones. So you did okay there. But we have that, right? That's a problem that we have in this country, is that we don't have a good sense of humility. And surrender requires humility. You know, I want to look at two passages about Paul to kind of show this one other time, okay? Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and 2 Corinthians chapter 11. I actually told them to you backwards. That's my fault. So we're going to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Start down in verse 23. And this is Paul. He's speaking here to the Corinthians. He's speaking about some false teachers in the area there. And he says, "Are they servants of Christ? I speak as if insane. I more so, in far more labors and far more imprisonments, beaten times without numbers, often in danger of death. 5 times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. And a night and a day have I spent in the deep. I have been on frequent journeys, in dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my countrymen, dangers from the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers on the sea, dangers among false brethren. I have been in labor and hardship through many sleepless nights and hunger and thirst, often without food and cold and exposure. And apart from these external things, there is the daily pressure of me concerning the churches." I read this list, and it shames me, right, when I think about sacrifice. And I've struggled, I honestly struggled with this a long time, because when we talk about sacrifice, very few of us ever talk about being imprisoned. Very few of us have to deal with the thought of being beaten, stoned, or any of these litanies of the things that Paul went through. And we don't deal with that. And so in my past, I struggled a lot thinking, you know, when I'm supposed to talk about sacrificing, and the example I have is Paul and Jesus, how do I deal with that? And that's where I go back to my thing. Because I don't think this is the result of an action that Paul took, right? This is a result of a process. Because Paul, and I think Jonathan did a great job talking about some of these things, Paul was living in the light. He was living as a Christian, and this is the result of his actions. But why did Paul get these things? And that's when we go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. And I go back to this thing of the American arrogance is we have this idea that, I mean, how many songs are there where the word respect is used? Where someone is I need my respect, or you get on the road and someone takes your spot and you get mad because they're disrespecting you. And I don't think any of us, maybe a few of us consider, say we've never had experience with some type of road rage where we've gotten mad because someone made a mistake and we lay onto the horn or we yelled in our car knowing that even though they can't hear you. I like to slow down when people yell at me and go, "I can't hear you." It's fun, though. But we have this, right? Because we're taught that it's all about this sense of self. And it's so, when this class being about sacrifice, and I think the first part of that is surrender, I think we struggle with that sometimes because we're always about who we are and the sense of ourselves and this disproportionate sense of worth given to us by different things in society. And here's Paul. No respect. He is making fun of himself, though, Jerry, and that, we're not there anymore. We don't make fun of ourselves. You and I might, right? Because we're goofy. So what other choice do we have, right? But that's not where we are in society, and that's not where our children are being raised. And our children, the influences are being put in front of them. The church as a whole, we can find ourselves being defensive about things that happen to us as a church, as a church family, being defensive and reacting the wrong way. And this, what we're going to read here in 1 Corinthians 9 is Paul's, this to me is why Paul, all that stuff that happened because Paul was serving God was the output of who Paul decided he wanted to be and how Paul decided he wanted to live his life. And look at this. He goes, I am free from all men. I have made myself to a slave to all so that I may win more. To the Jews I became as a Jew so that I might win Jews. Now, Paul was Jewish, right? You know, we don't want to forget that. It's not like he wasn't faking. He wasn't lying about who he was. He was a Jew among Jews. To those who are under the law, as under the law, though not being myself under the law, so that I may win those who are in the law. Paul was raised. He was a student of the law. So he could come from that perspective, right? To those who are without the law, those who are not under the old law, as without the law, though not being with the law of God, but under the law of Christ, so that I might win those who are without the law. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. Paul, we know Paul has struggles, right? And I have become all things to all men so that I may by all means save some. See, this to me is the process by what Paul went through that led to the outcomes that he had. This is the surrender of Paul's self to someone else's will. And not even in this instance just to the will of God, because that's really where Paul's beatings came from, because he was surrendered to the will of God. But Paul, in trying to serve God, surrendered himself to fellow man's wills. He became, obviously never stepped away from righteousness. But when he was talking to a Jew, he came from that perspective. He didn't lord over him that I know more than you because of this or that or the other. But he became as a Jew, so I can talk to you from that perspective. And and we're talking to someone who was weak. He didn't come at them and say, well, let me solve all your problems for them. He came at them from, I have been that person. And he says, I have become all things to all men. And that's not what we want to do in our society today. We want to be who we are. You're disrespecting my person. It's all about me. And we struggle with surrendering. And I tell you, when I used to read the litany of the things Paul went through, I struggle, and I still do today, because there's no way in my life I'm never gonna die on a cross like Jesus, and that's the ultimate sacrifice. That's our example, and I'm never gonna be shipwrecked, Lord willing. I do go on cruises, so I guess it could happen, but but it wouldn't be going on a mission trip. That's for sure. Well, I guess we could take a cruise for a mission trip, right? We could do that. No, that would no. We'll fly there. I'm not going to be beaten. But then I think, okay, well, what happened? What was Paul doing? And then I thought, this is the sacrifice. This is the surrender that every one of us can make that allows us to have the sacrificial heart that allows us to sacrifice as a family. It's when we surrender who we are, first to Christ, and then, as Paul said, to those who we need to save. That's the first step in sacrificing as a family, is stepping back and letting go of self. Because if we hold ourselves up, Paul, he was an apostle. We get impressed by like athletes and celebrities. I mean, how many TV shows are there to talk about celebrities? We spend hours watching award shows. If you want to make your life better, turn them all off. Never watch them again. What a waste of time. My wife loves them. She's giving me the evil eye. I don't. It's just people building themselves up. But we hold these people up in such esteem. And we hold them up as our heroes. And then here's this family here. Here's one of our biblical heroes, Paul. He didn't do any of that. Paul, when he says this stuff, what does he say? He goes, in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, 2 Corinthians chapter 11, what did he say? He's like, he was apologizing before he said all that stuff. Did you read it? He's like, I don't want to say any of this stuff. But these false teachers, they're saying some stuff. And the only reason, I'm going to say anything I'm about to say is because the false teachers are saying, Paul could have lived his whole life and never told anyone about him being beaten, him being shipwrecked. But he says, I feel like I have to tell you this stuff, so you'll know, because these guys who are saying they did these things, they're not the servants of God. Here's what, so I'm going to tell you this stuff. But the whole chapter, it's like one of those things. Every three or four verses, he says, "I don't really want to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway." That's the example we have, and that's not the example that we're holding up all the time in this society to our families. So surrender is the first step, and it's a big step. I'll look at a couple of verses. Someone look at Matthew 10:37, and then Matthew, and then someone else grab Matthew 16:24. Because you watch, I like war movies, you know, and they'll surrender with terms. Have you ever seen that? They'll come up, they'll say, "I'm going to surrender, but I've got a few conditions, a conditional surrender. I'll surrender, but I've got to have all my people this saved and that and the other, and my guys get to keep their swords," whatever it might be. And let's read these two verses and let's try to determine if our surrender to God is a conditional surrender or not. So I'm going to read Matthew 10:37. And how about Matthew 16:24? Go ahead and read 25. So is this a conditional surrender? It was right, Tracy. It can't be. I mean, it sounds harsh, doesn't it? Whoever loves his mother, father, son, or daughter more than me. And that sounds harsh, doesn't it? And then he says, you got to deny yourself. So whoever loves mother, father, son, daughter, self, spouse, more than me. That's a tough rule. But that's the surrender that we have to make to Christ, to God, if we're going to be able to sacrifice to Him. Because only by surrendering our will, Jesus in heaven surrendered His will to God and came to earth. The outcome of that was He died on the cross. To our blessing, to our benefit. But He surrendered His will to God and gave up more. I've never been to heaven. According to Jonathan, I'm going. According to the Bible, we'll say that. How about that's even better? But my brother told me too, so that's pretty good. And whatever that is that we're striving to get to, Jesus was there. And when we go to heaven, not everyone's mother, father, son, daughter, spouse is going to be there with them. And Jesus gave that up and came down and dealt with what we have to deal with and died for us. It's a pretty big surrender. So that's what we have to do. That's how we have to approach this. In my mind, that's input, process, output. The process is, I've got to surrender. I've got to surrender my wills to God. So what's the output going to be? Johnny, I don't know if you read my Facebook post. Yesterday I observed that Alabama fans are fatter than Auburn fans. I was at Disney World. What else I have observed is that people learn better through example and experiential learning by doing things. Do you guys agree with that? Some people don't. Some people are really good book people. They can sit and read a book and learn. They can just sit and learn by reading a book. I have never in my life been able to learn that way. I've been able to learn facts and things so forth, but I haven't been able to learn putting something into place, something into action. Example and experiential learning. So, we've discussed a couple of examples, right? Paul and Jesus. I'm going to ask you a really good question here. I think this once again has to do with perhaps our mindsets as Americans. we have the example of Jesus and the example of Paul. And we have what we consider sacrifice, but you have a preconceived notion of sacrifice in your head right now. You do. What's the one thing that Paul and Jesus didn't sacrifice that we would consider a sacrifice? There may be a lot, but there's one big one, I think. No, I think they sacrificed their will. They maintain their belief, but it's something you're getting way too. There you go. Every biblical example of sacrifice, there's little ones. What's the biggest lesson on giving in the Bible? What's the biggest lesson on sacrificial giving in the Bible? Right? The widow's mites. It is the smallest example of giving in the Bible, too, from a monetary standpoint. Right? It's a penny or something thereabout. It's nothing. You know, I don't even stop to pick up pennies, guys. I'm not trying to be mean. I just, well, if they're wet, if they're dry, I'll pick them up. If they're wet, I will not pick them up. Sadly, that's actually true. I don't like wet money. That's another thing. I just don't know why it is. If it's dry, I'll pick it up. But I probably lost more pennies in my life than I care to think about, right? I mean, you know, you won't take the front seat out of a car to get, you'd take the front seat out of the car to get a $20 bill out from underneath it. But you won't take the front seat out of the car to get a penny out from underneath it. I can guarantee you that. You'll just say, it's not worth my time. The two biblical examples we talked about, they didn't sacrifice a penny. But when we as humans talk about sacrifice, as Americans, what do we talk about the most? Money. I think we're missing the boat, guys. Can you? Yes, I have a really good question to ask, but you get to go first.
No, I think it's because money equals time in our society. What they paid was their time and their work. And
yeah.
Our trade-off for that is money.
I know. I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you, but I'm going to come back to that in a second, okay? Because that's actually a great point. I want to come back to it because it has to do with that example and experiential learning for our family, for each other, and then for our children. Because I actually thought about that when I was writing this class, because you know that's so easy. But now I've forgotten my good question I was going to ask. So we have to talk about your point first. What did I say right before you asked me the question?
You have a really good question.
No. After the wet money part, before the good question part. It does. Yeah, no, it's that. Yeah, I think we're missing the boat. Guys, this was really going to be a good point too. It was an ad lib. It's not in my notes, so it was like really frustrating.
You said Jesus and Paul didn't.
No, that was too far back. Can we play the tape back? No. Let's talk about your point, Stephanie, because I think it's great. But let's talk about it kind of a bigger thing. We do substitute money for time, right? Because that's one way we view it. You know, we view money as a substitution for a lot of things, though, right? Some people view money as a substitution for love, right? Does money replace love?
No.
Right? It doesn't. Do your children really understand the concept of money equals time? Time equals money? Mm-mm. They certainly don't. Though there is a need for money to do the work of the church, and we're commanded to give, the sacrifices that we have examples of in the Bible are not always sacrifices of money. They're sacrifices of different things. And money is a substitute for time, and sometimes that's the best way we can move forward with work. If there's a mission field that needs to go to, someone has the ability to earn money to send the missionary there, and I'm not saying that's not sacrificial. But when I think about trying to teach a child about sacrificial giving, I'm not even sure my kids today understand sacrificial giving from a monetary standpoint. You know. Because we, you know, I don't know, I spoiled my kids, right? I gave them too much probably when they were little. And we're parents, we do that type of stuff, right? You know, that's what we do. We want our kids to have things great. And so they want the Xbox, we buy the Xbox. And they want this, we buy that. And we're just being good parents. By the way, you're not getting anything after I'm done here. You're done. No. All right, thanks. You don't like Andrew? Came to see me instead? Oh, that's so cool.
Feel special, man.
All right. So when you're trying to teach someone who doesn't even understand the concept, and I think Jonathan's trying to, you know, we talk. He said, "What did he say? Trying to show a poor man a fancy steak." I don't know if I quite got that analogy. You know, I guess when you're poor, any steak will work, right? I guess that's what he was saying. When you don't really have a concept of money, any amount of money looks like a lot of money, right? And sacrificial giving is what the widow did. The widow gave all that she had. And none of us are doing that. Yes, Phil.
Well, back to your experiential learning. As parents, I don't think we can ever teach our kids about sacrificial giving unless we are doing something that shows sacrificial giving.
Yeah.
No matter what you say, if you're not showing it, they're not going to understand it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think when we said family, I came at this from two spots. One was a family, that your family unit. Two is the family, the body of God. And I think where I was going, and Stephanie, getting back to where I got confused, I wanted to go down the path of, you know, once we understand what surrender is, and we can start sacrificing, I wanted to start talking about sacrificial giving, sacrificial actions that we can do that bring our family closer to God. And like Phil said, sacrificial giving, perhaps, that your family can understand. And I've written down some things. I want to start with a couple of biblical examples of, in my mind, just that stick with me a lot, of sacrificial actions that were not ended up being ordinary people, but at the time were ordinary people. And then some things that have been key to my life here as a part of this family. So I want to talk about those, and then I want you guys to give me some stuff too. And I really like to hear some good examples of doing something sacrificial giving wise. So first one that I've always been impressed with was Abram, not Abraham. He was famous when he was Abraham. When he was Abram, he was just a guy living in Ur of the Chaldees, right? And God says, "Move." And I've moved enough in my life to know that it's not always fun, right? Some of you know that too. And one thing that all of you guys have that Abram didn't have was a church where you go, right? Abram got up, and God said, "Move," and he got on his camels and rode all through the Great Crescent down to Israel. That's a huge sacrifice for his family. And I have moved my kids before. And I know, Bob, Jen, you guys have before too. And I'm sure many of you have also moved with your children and know the impact that can have on their lives. And I just kind of think the impact when they go and say, "Hey, Dad, Abram, what are you doing?" He's like, "Well, God said I've got to do this." God didn't talk to them, right? God talked to Abram. I think that's a pretty great example of someone who did a non-monetary sacrifice. The other one I think of a lot is Hannah. Can you imagine giving up your kid? I know she got to go see him on the weekends, you know, or whatever it was. And Eli didn't seem like the best dad in the world. I mean, his experience wasn't good with his own kids, I don't think. But she gave up Samuel to God. I think those are just amazing examples. Can you even think of any other biblical examples like that? Before I move on to some things that I've seen here.
Well, Ruth, she gave up her home when her husband died.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's great. There's so many great biblical examples of sacrifice. Tracy, I'll get you next, Jimmy.
I think about Barnabas.
Barnabas and the early Christians in Acts, where it talks about how they went and sold land and they sold some of the things that they owned so that they could give and support not just the work of the church there at the beginning, but the people who were there who had needs. And that's something that, you know, we think about the widow's mites when we think about giving, but we very rarely think about they actually went and sold something that belonged, that had been passed down in their family, so that they could give that to the church and continue that work.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that we can do.
Yeah.
We talk about, you talk about what, how do you teach your kids about sacrificial giving. That's something that we do here every year with Mission Sunday, and there's a huge run-up to it. But in homes, I see families in homes giving their kids specific things that they can do to earn extra money, not so they can go buy that new Xbox game, but so that they can, and our kids used to say, we want to give this money to Josiah and Vivian. You know, I mean, it's a putting a face on where your sacrificial money, sacrificial giving is going. You make that personal, but the church in the first century worked hard together to sacrifice together so that their common goal could be out, if you say.
Okay. Thanks. Jimmy?
One quick statement I had, it wasn't so much a story, as when you were talking about sacrificial and time and money, I always put myself in an analogy. What if you were getting ready, you need to leave, have a lunch, and you know you had to be back at work, and someone needed prayer because of a death or counseling of a situation? What could you have to explain to your boss or supervisor why you were late? Or would you not do what you're supposed to do because you're worried about being on time and reading up? You know, that's a great sacrifice in time. Except we don't know what was planned before.
Jimmy, you're touching on one of the tough subjects we all have to deal with is it's real life examples of how do we live a Christian life in this society. You know, you can get fired for being back late. I know a guy who says it's always right to do right, though. Now, the question is, what's right? Is it right to pray? Or is it right to, you know, but, you know, you're right. And sometimes that's it. I got 5 minutes left, so I got to get through these points real quick, okay? Tracy actually hit on my first. When I think of examples here at Palm Beach Lakes of the family, things that have always had a big impact on me. The first one I actually had was the missionaries that we sent out, and Josh and Kara, you know, being primary, the sacrifice that they made as an example to us, and then I start thinking about now that I'm a grandparent, the sacrifice of their parents. I mean, you know, what a huge thing to have your grandkids go overseas for all those years. We can't handle it when they're in Nashville. We only get to see them every 2 months. You know, thankfully God let us have wise men who created, or women who created Skype. But like, I don't know, Mom, I mean, you know, when we were in New Zealand, you know, Nan and Pop never saw us for years. There's a lot of examples of things like that that you could hold up to here as a family, but also the family there. You know, still to me I'm still impressed by how this church responded, and many of you weren't here, but when Andrew came through as a hurricane, and how it wasn't just the going down and doing stuff. It was everyone who was a member, and it wasn't just this congregation. There are congregations all over the country and all over Florida who are doing this, working together as a unit. And yes, there was money involved. But there was time. I mean, so many people went down so much. And it just went on for months, it seemed like. And there was always something going on.
It happened again with Charlie.
I don't know if I was here when Charlie happened. Yeah. By the way, a hurricane has never hit Palm Beach County when I've lived here. That is not a lie. It's not a lie. That's my sacrifices. I can't move. I got to stay here forever. No. We went to South Carolina for 4 years. You got 3 hurricanes. I came back. None since. Just saying. But that's right. I moved here when I was 13. No hurricanes from when I was 13 to when I left. Yes. I'm holy, obviously. Jonathan just told me I was. No, okay, seriously though, get back to, you know, the other thing that I still, and I don't know if it's a sacrifice, but I remember it being something that people gave themselves was the day we painted the building together. Yes. You know, what a showing of something that we did as a community and as a family. And everyone, you know, and I didn't write this down here. There was a time where there was a gentleman in this church who needed some help, and a group of us gathered at his house to clean his house. And it was disgusting. And I don't want to say who it is, so please don't even ask me. But to see people who I had such high respect for just clean and nasty stuff and just doing, I mean, it just meant so much to me. Little examples of things like that where people need help. And I could list 20 such experiences, and all of you have had them too, where people who you might societally look at them and go, well, this person is successful. He's the CEO of some company, and he's got a toilet brush in his hand cleaning a toilet out, right? He's surrendering himself to someone else's need. And to me, that's a sacrificial type of thing because that's giving up yourself. So, all right, you got 2 minutes. Then I got to get my conclusion in. Actually, you don't have any minutes, but I'll give you one. Anything else before I... All right, good, because you didn't really have any time. The class is, how do we sacrifice like Jesus? How do we become more like Christ? How do we get closer to Christ because we sacrifice like Jesus? And isn't that what our name means, Christian? It's Christ-like. That's what we're trying to do. Matthew 6:19, what does that say? Yeah, and you know that to me, when I think about it in the context of Jesus surrendering his will to God, is when he came to earth, he had the power to do whatever he wanted to do. You know? And of course we assume that Jesus being Jesus, he's going to do the right thing. But he had the power to do whatever. Every fantasy movie I've ever watched, Jesus could beat the Avengers. I mean, he could. He'd make the Hulk look like a weakling if he wanted to. But Jesus had surrendered his will to God. And how do we grow closer to God? How do we as a family become a sacrificial family? Is in every action that we do, we surrender our will to God's and to each other's, like Paul did. I really appreciate your time. And I hope you got something out of this class. I know I did by trying to get ready for it. Thank you. Thank you.